dancing in his kitchen earlier. She's eyeing me as she makes her way over. The closer she gets, the prettier she gets. She doesn't sit in a chair, she sits right down on Samson's lap. She stares at me like she's expecting me to have a reaction to the fact that she's now using Samson as her personal chair. But I'm good at hiding what I'm feeling. Why am I even feeling anything at all? Who are you? Cadence asks me. Bea, I'm Sarah's stepsister. I can tell by the way her eyes scroll over me that she's definitely a locker room girl. She wraps an arm around Samson like she's staking a claim. Samson just looks bored or lost in thought. Bo, who was just in the water with Cadence, sits down next to me after grabbing a beer. His gaze starts at my feet and slowly slides up my body until he's finally looking me in the eye. I'm Bo, he says with an ambitious grin, reaching out a hand. I shake it, but when I do, Sarah reappears with Marcos from their swim. She groans when she sees Bo giving me attention. Bea is engaged to be married, Sarah says. Don't waste your time. Bo looks down at my hand.
I don't see a ring.
That's because the diamond is so big it's too heavy for her to wear all day, she retorts. Bo leans in toward me, staring at me with a smirk.
She's lying because she hates me.
I can see that.
Where are you from?
Kentucky.
How long are you here for?
The summer, probably. He grins.
Nice, me too. If you ever get bored, I live over...
He lifts a hand to point toward wherever his house is, but he stops speaking because Sarah is now standing in front of us. She grabs my hand. Come on, Bea, let's go home. I'm relieved. I didn't want to be here to begin with. I stand up and Bo rolls his eyes, throwing up a defeated hand.
You're always ruining my fun, Sarah.
Sarah leans down and gives Marcos a kiss goodbye. I glance over in Samson's direction. All I can seem to focus on is the hand he has pressed against Cadence's thigh. I start to turn to walk with Sarah, but right before I do, Samson makes eye contact with me. He stares so hard I feel it pinching my chest. I look away and don't look back as I follow Sarah. What's up with Bo? I ask as we walk back toward the house. He's inappropriate in every way imaginable. Please don't give him any attention. It's the last thing he deserves. It's hard to give anyone else attention when Samson is in my presence. Sarah and I walk past the dunes, and everything in me wants to give one last glance back toward him, but I don't. What about the girl, Cadence? Don't worry, Sarah says. She'll be gone tomorrow and Samson will be free. I laugh.
I'm not waiting in that line.
Probably for the best, Sarah says when we reach her house. Samson's leaving for the Air Force Academy at the end of the summer. As much as I was hoping I could set the two of you up, it would also suck if you fell for him right before he gets shipped away. I pause on the stairs when she says that, but she doesn't notice because she's in front of me. But that takes me by surprise. He didn't mention what he was doing after his gap year was over. I don't know why, but I didn't expect it to be the military. When we get inside the house, all the lights are out. Wanna stay up and watch a movie? I'm exhausted. Maybe tomorrow night? She sits down on the sofa and grabs the remote. She leans her head back into the couch and looks at me upside down. I'm glad you're here, Bea. She powers on the TV, and her attention is no longer on me, but her words make me smile. I believe her when she says she's glad I'm here. That feels good. It's not often I feel like my presence is appreciated, or even noticed. When I get up to my room, I close and lock the door. I walk over to the balcony doors and open them, wanting to listen to the sound of the ocean tonight while I sleep. But I also want to see what Samson is doing. Marcos and Bo are still down at the fire. Cadence is walking away from the group in the opposite direction of Samson's house. Samson is walking over the dune crossing, heading toward his house, alone. Why does that make me happy? I don't want him to notice me up here, so I walk back into my room and close the balcony doors.
Before I crawl into bed, I take Mother Teresa out of the plastic sack she traveled in and prop the painting up on the dresser. It looks so out of place in this fancy room, but that makes me even happier that I brought it with me. I need a piece of home to remind me that this room and this house and this town are not my reality. Chapter 9. What the hell is that sound? I put my hand over my ear, confused by the noise that's forcing me out of a perfectly deep sleep. It's coming from across the room. I open my eyes and lift my head off the pillow, and the sound gets louder. I glance outside, and there's barely any light. The horizon is gray, like the world is still preparing to wake up. I groan and toss the covers aside so I can locate the source of all the noise. It sounds like it's coming from the dresser, so I shuffle over to it. It's my new phone. I wipe sleep from my eyes so I can read the screen. It's only 5:59 a.m. An alarm is set on my phone. It says, "Go watch the sunrise." That's all the alert says. I cancel the alarm and the room falls silent again. I glance behind me toward the balcony. Samson. It better be worth it. I grab the comforter off my bed and wrap myself in it. I go out onto the balcony and look at Samson's balcony. It's empty. I sit down in one of the chairs and pull the covers up to my chin. I stare out over the dark horizon. To the east, there's just the smallest sliver of sun peeking out over the ocean. To the north, the skies are dark and occasionally burst with lightning. It looks like a storm is rolling in, threatening to snuff out the light. I sit on my balcony and stare at the sun as it slowly illuminates the peninsula. I listen to the sound of the waves as they wash onto the beach. Thunder rolls in the distance while seagulls begin to chirp nearby. I'm in a complete trance for several minutes as the wind begins to pick up. As bright as the sunrise began, it slowly darkens as the storm moves closer. The skies swallow up every hue of color that was attempting to burst through, and after a while, everything is a muted gray. That's when the rain starts. I'm protected by a roof over the balcony, and the wind isn't extreme right now, so I remain outside, watching as everything that started out hopeful just 15 minutes ago slowly turns to gloom. I wonder if Samson knew there would be a storm rolling in with the sunrise today. I glance over at his house, and he's standing in his doorway, leaning against the doorframe, holding a cup of coffee. He isn't looking at the rain, or the ocean, or the sky. He's looking at me. Seeing him watching me stirs something inside of me that I don't want to be stirred. I stare back at him for a moment, wondering if he wakes up every morning to watch the sunrise, or if he just wanted to see what I would do about the alarm he set on my phone. Maybe he actually appreciates the sunrise. Is he one of the few who doesn't take this view for granted? I think there's a chance I might be wrong about him. I might have judged him a little too soon. But then again, what's it matter if I am wrong? Things between us are awkward, and I don't see that changing, unless one of us has a personality transplant. I break our stare and walk back inside. I crawl back into bed. I think I'll just stay here. Chapter 10. I've spent the majority of the last 3 days in my bedroom. The rain, coupled with the week I've had, made me not want to face the world at all. Plus, this bedroom is becoming my favorite place because I feel secure here, encased by these four walls. I have an unobstructed view of the ocean, a television I've finally figured out how to work, and my own bathroom. I really could stay in this room for the rest of my time here and be content. The issue is everyone else who lives in this house. My father has checked on me multiple times, I told him I had a headache and my throat was sore and it hurt to talk. So he just pops in every now and then and asks if I'm feeling okay. Sarah has been bringing me things, food, water, medicine I don't really need. At one point yesterday, she crawled into my bed and watched Netflix with me for an hour before leaving to go on a date with Marcos. We didn't speak much, but I surprisingly didn't mind her company. She has a good energy. Sometimes I feel like a black hole around her, like maybe I'm sucking all the life out of her by just being in her innocent presence. I've kept track of Samson's routine more than I care to admit. I don't know why I'm so curious about him. His routine intrigues me, though. I've left his alarm on my phone because the sunrises seem to have become a thing with us. He's out on his own balcony every morning. We watch the world wake up alone, yet together. Each time I make my way back into my bedroom, we make brief eye contact. He doesn't speak to me, though. He's either not a morning person or he'd rather appreciate the sunrise in silence. Either way, it feels intimate somehow, like we have this secret daily meeting no one else knows about, even though we never speak during said meeting. I usually go back to bed afterward, but Samson always leaves his house. I don't know where he goes that early each morning, but he's gone most of every day. And when he returns at night, his house is always dark. He only ever turns on the light to whatever room he's in, and then he turns out the light as soon as he leaves that room. He seems to live with military precision already. The house is spotless from what I can tell from my window. Makes me wonder what kind of father he has. If he's going into the military, maybe he was raised in the military. Maybe that's why he seems so controlled and keeps his house so clean. I really need to find something to occupy my brain if this is what I spend my time thinking about. Maybe I should get a job. I can't stay in this room forever. I could buy a volleyball and a net and get some practice in, but that doesn't sound appealing at all. We've already been assigned workout routines and schedules from the coach, but I haven't even opened the email. I don't know why, but I have absolutely no desire to look at a volleyball until I'm in Pennsylvania. I've lived volleyball for the past 5 years of my life. I'm about to live it for the next four. I deserve a month or two of not having to think about it. The rain has stopped and the sun is out today. If I continue to pretend I'm sick for a fourth day in a row, my father might actually take me to a doctor. I don't really have an excuse to stay in my room much longer, and it would be a good day to go out and job hunt. Maybe I could get a waitressing job and save up my tips for when I leave for college. I'd give anything for another day like the three that came before this one, though. But it doesn't look like I'm gonna get it because someone is knocking at my bedroom door.
"It's me," Sarah says. "Can I come in?"
"Sure." I'm already sitting up on the bed, leaning against the headboard. Sarah crawls onto the bed and sits next to me. She smells like cinnamon.
"You feeling better?"
I nod and force a small smile.
"Yeah, a little bit."
"Good."
"The rain finally stopped. You want to have a beach day later?"
"I don't know. I was thinking maybe I should look for a summer job. I need to save up some money for college." She laughs at that.
"No, enjoy your last summer before adulthood kicks in. Take advantage of all this," she says, waving her hand in the air.
She's so chipper. I'm still stuck in yesterday's mood. There's an obvious imbalance between us right now. She notices because her smile disappears and she narrows her eyes at me.
"You okay, Bea?"
I smile, but it takes too much effort and my smile falters with a sigh. "I don't know. This is all just, it's kind of weird for me."
"What?"
"Being here."
"Do you want to go back home?"
"No. I don't even know where home is right now, but I don't say that. I'm in limbo and it's a strange feeling, a depressing feeling."
"Are you sad?" she asks.
"I think so."
"Is there anything I can do about it?"
I shake my head.
"No."
She rolls onto her side, holding her head up with her hand.
"We have to get you out of this funk. Do you think some of it is because you feel like a stranger in this house?" I nod.
I do feel out of place here. It probably contributes. Then we just need to fast track our friendship. She rolls onto her back.
Let's get to know each other. Ask me some questions.
There actually is a lot I want to know about her, so I lean my head against the headboard and think of some. Do you have a good relationship with your mother?
Yeah, I love her. She's my best friend.
Lucky.
Where is your dad? He lives in Dallas. They divorced 5 years ago.
Do you ever see him?
Sarah nods. Yeah, he's a good dad, a lot like yours.
I somehow keep a straight face after that comment. She's got two good parents and a stepfather that seems to know her better than he knows his own daughter. I hope she doesn't take that for granted. Sarah hasn't been through a lot of hardship, I can tell by looking at her. She's still full of hope.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened to you? I ask her. My parents' divorce was really hard for me, she says.
What's the best thing that's ever happened to you? She grins.
Marcos.
How long have you two been together?
Since spring break.
That's it?
Yeah, just a few months, but I would bet my life we're gonna get married someday.
Don't do that.
Don't marry him?
She asks, rolling onto her stomach. Don't bet your life on it. You've only known him a few months. She grins.
Oh, I don't mean anytime soon. We'll wait until after college.
She's still smiling dreamily when she says,
I'm transferring schools so I can be closer to him.
Is he in college too?
Yeah, he's a fashion major at U of H, minoring in business.
He's a fashion major? She nods.
He wants to start a clothing line called His Panic.
That explains the shirts.
Yeah, it's pretty clever. He was born in Chiapas, so he plans to donate some of the income to help fight poverty there if his clothing line ever takes off. He already has 5,000 followers on Instagram.
Is that good? I don't know a lot about social media.
It's better than not having 5,000 followers.
She sits up on the bed and crosses her legs. She moves so much, I wish I had half her energy.
Can I ask you a question?
I nod. I've asked you about 10, so it's only fair.
What makes you happy?
Her expression is full of genuine curiosity. I have to look away before she sees that expression on my own face because honestly, I don't know what makes me happy. I'm kind of curious about it too. I've spent my whole life just trying to survive. I've never really thought about the things that lie beyond that. Getting a meal used to make me happy. Nights when my mother didn't bring home strange men used to make me happy. Paydays at McDonald's used to make me happy. I'm not sure why her question triggers so much in me, but I realize for the first time since I got here that the same things that used to make me happy aren't even issues in my life anymore. What does make me happy? I don't know. I look out the window at the water and feel a sense of calmness come over me. The ocean, I guess.
Then you should enjoy the ocean while you have it.
Don't get a summer job. You have the rest of your life to work.
Make this summer all about you. It sounds to me like you deserve to be a little selfish for once.
I nod in agreement. I do deserve it. She smiles.
I'm glad you realize that.
She pushes herself off the bed.
I promised Marcos I'd go with him to get his hair cut and grab a late lunch. You can come with us if you want.
No, I need to shower. I might go for a walk on the beach later.
Sarah backs out of my room. Okay, we'll be back in a couple hours. Don't eat dinner, we're cooking out on the beach tonight.
Sarah mentioned how there's a large part of Bolivar Peninsula referred to as Zoo Beach. Vehicles are allowed on the sand as well as golf carts, so it's constant traffic and a constant party. The area where Sarah lives still sees some of that traffic, but it isn't nearly as busy as certain parts of the peninsula. But just a couple miles down from Sarah's house begins a whole different world. Not necessarily a better one. I guess that would depend on the mood you're in, but my mood right now certainly isn't loud music and toxic masculinity. I turn around to walk back before I get too far into the crowded area. There are a couple of guys sitting on the back of their truck coaxing a dog over with a hamburger. The dog's rib cage is visible through his fur. I watch as the dog slowly makes its way toward the two guys in the back of the truck, as if he knows there's a price he'll have to pay for the food he's about to get. I immediately empathize with the dog.
"That's it," one of the guys says, holding his hamburger out. "Just a little closer."
When the dog is within reach of him, the guy pulls his food away, and the other guy quickly steps over the dog and captures it between his knees. They're laughing as he pulls a headband over the dog's eyes and lets him loose. The dog begins to stumble around, unable to see. I rush over to the dog as he tries to claw the headband off with his foot. I remove it from around his head, and he looks up at me, scared, then scurries off.
"Come on," one of the guys says. "We're just having fun with him."
I throw the headband at them. Stupid fucks. The dog is running away now. I walk over and grab the hamburger out of the guy's hand and follow after the dog.
"Bitch," I hear one of them mutter.
I walk back in the direction I came from, away from the crowd and toward the dog. The poor thing hides behind a blue trash can and hunkers down. I walk slowly toward him until I'm a few feet away, and then I gently toss the burger in his direction. The dog sniffs it for a second and then begins eating it. I continue walking, angry now. I don't understand humans sometimes. I hate it because I find myself wishing that the entirety of humanity would suffer just a tiny amount more than they do. Maybe if everyone tasted a bit of what that dog has lived through, they would be more hesitant to be assholes. I'm halfway home before I realize the dog has been following me. He must think I have more burgers. I stop and the dog stops. We stare each other down, sizing one another up. I don't have any more food. I start walking again and the dog continues to follow me. Every now and then he'll get sidetracked by something, but then he'll look up and find me and run to catch up with me. He's still on my heels when I finally reach the house. I'm positive I'm not allowed to take a dog this filthy inside with me, but I can at least get him some food. When I reach the bottom steps, I turn and point at him. "Stay." The dog sits right where I point. It surprises me. At least he listens well. I grab some slices of turkey out of the refrigerator and make a bowl of water and take it down to the dog. I sit on the bottom step and rub his head while he eats. I don't know if feeding him here at the house is a bad move. He'll probably hang around now that I've fed him, but maybe that's not such a bad thing. I could use the company of something that doesn't judge me.
"Bea!"
The dog's ears perk up at the sound of my name. I look up and around, trying to locate the person who just yelled, but I don't see anyone.
"Up here!"
I look at the house catty-cornered to this one on the second row behind a vacant beachfront lot. There's a guy standing on the edge of an extremely high roof. He's so high up it takes me a few seconds before I realize the guy is Samson. He waves me over and, like an idiot, I look around to make sure he's talking to me even though he specifically said my name.
"Come here," he yells.
Samson is shirtless. I feel as pathetic and as hungry as this dog when I immediately stand up. I look down at the dog. "I'll be right back. Stay here." As soon as I start to walk across the street, the dog follows me. I walk into the yard that contains the house Samson is standing on top of. He's dangerously close to the edge of the roof now, looking down.
"Take the stairs to the front door. Then take the first door on the left in the hallway. It leads to the roof access. I want to show you something."
I can see the sweat glistening on his skin from down here, so I look at my feet for a second, trying to figure out what to do. I haven't necessarily had the best interactions with him. Why would I expose myself to more of that? "I'm scared of heights," I say loudly, looking up at him. Samson laughs.
"You aren't scared of anything. Get up here."
I don't like how he says that with such confidence, like he knows me. But he's right, I'm not scared of much. I turn to the dog and point next to the stairs. Stay. The dog walks over to the spot I pointed at and sits. Damn, dog, you are so smart. I head up the stairs to the front door. Should I knock? I do, but no one answers. I'm assuming Samson is the only one here, or he would have come down to let me in himself. I push the door open and feel extremely weird being in an unfamiliar house. I quickly head for the door on the left and open it. It's a stairwell that leads all the way up to a small, enclosed, circular seating area at the top of the stairs. It's shaped like the top of a lighthouse and is situated in the center of the house. It's encased in windows with a 360-degree view. It's stunning. I don't know why every house doesn't have one of these. I'd come up here every night and read a book. One of the windows opens onto the roof, and Samson is waiting for me, holding it open. This is really cool, I say, looking out. It takes me a moment to work up courage before I can step onto the roof. I'm not actually afraid of heights, like I said earlier, but this house is on stilts, and there are two floors on top of those stilts. Samson takes my hand and helps me out and onto the roof before closing the window. I inhale a shaky breath when I get situated because I didn't realize how high up we were until this moment. I don't dare look down. Everything looks different from up here. Because of the height of this roof, all the other houses seem small in comparison. There are loose shingles lying in a pile next to a toolbox at Samson's feet. Is this one of your 5 rent houses?
No, just helping my friend Marjorie. She's got a leak.
The roof up here has 2 levels, one just a couple of feet higher than the other. Samson steps onto the 2nd level and puts his hands on his hips.
Come here.
Once I'm standing next to him, he points in the opposite direction of the ocean.
You can see the sunset over the bay from up here.
I look in the direction he's pointing, and the sky is ablaze on the other side of the peninsula. Reds and purples and pinks and blues all swirled together.
Marjorie has the tallest house in the neighborhood. You can see the entire peninsula.
I spin in a slow circle, admiring the view. The bay is lit up with splashes of color so bright it looks like a filter. I can see the entire beach as far as my eyes allow. It's beautiful. Samson stares at the sunset for a moment, then hops down to the lower part of the split-level roof. He walks over to the toolbox, kneeling down next to it. He places a shingle on the roof and begins tacking it on. Witnessing how he just moves about on this roof like he's on level ground makes me unsteady on my own feet. I sit down.
That's all I wanted, he says. I know you like the sunrises, so I wanted you to see the sunset from up here.
Today's sunrise actually depressed me. He nods as if he knows exactly what I mean by that.
Yeah. Sometimes things are so pretty it makes everything else a little less impressive.
I watch him in silence for a while. He secures about 5 shingles in place while the sky eats up most of his light. He knows I'm watching him, but for some reason it doesn't feel embarrassing to stare at him this time. It's like he prefers me to be here than not. Kind of how it feels in the mornings when we sit on our respective balconies and don't speak. His hair is wet from sweat, so it's a darker blonde than normal. There's a necklace hanging around his neck, and every now and then when he moves, I can see a flash of a tan line beneath it. He must never take it off. It's a piece of wood hanging from a thin black braided cord. Does your necklace have meaning? He nods, but doesn't explain what that meaning is. He just keeps working.
Are you going to tell me what it means?
He shakes his head. Okay, then. I sigh. What am I even doing trying to have a conversation with him? I forgot what it's like.
Did you get a dog today? He asks.
I went for a walk. He followed me home.
I saw you feed him. He's not leaving now.
I don't mind. Samson eyes me for a moment, then wipes sweat away from his forehead with his arm.
What are Sarah and Marcos doing tonight?
I shrug. She said something about a cookout.
good. I'm starving.
He goes back to tacking shingles onto the roof. Who is Marjorie? I ask.
She owns this house. Her husband died a couple of years ago, so I help her out every now and then.
I wonder how many people he knows in this neighborhood. Did he grow up in Texas? Where did he go to school? Why is he going to the Air Force? I have so many questions. How long have you had houses here?
I don't have houses here, he says. My father does.
How long has your father had houses here? Samson takes a second to answer.
I don't want to talk about my father's houses.
I chew on my lip. It seems like a lot of questions are off limits with him. I hate it because it makes me even more curious. I don't come across people who hoard secrets like I do. Most people want a listener, someone they can spill everything to. Samson doesn't want a listener. Neither do I, which probably explains why conversations between us feel different than conversations I have with other people. Our conversations feel splotchy, like globs of ink and lots of white space. Samson begins putting all his tools back in his toolbox. It's still light out, but it won't be for much longer. He stands up and comes back up to the top level, then sits down next to me on the roof. I can feel the heat from his body, he's so close. He rests his elbows on his knees. He really is a beautiful person. It's hard not to stare at people like him. But I think his charisma comes more from the way he carries himself than how he looks. He may have an artistic side. There's definitely a quiet aspect to him that makes him seem introspective. Or maybe he's just guarded. Whatever it is that makes him up as a whole, I find myself viewing him as a project I want to take on, a challenge. I want to crack him open and see what's inside him that makes him the only person on the planet I'm genuinely curious about. Samson runs a thumb across his bottom lip, so naturally I'm already staring at his mouth when he begins to speak.
There was this fisherman who used to come around a lot, he says. His name was Rake. He lived on his boat and would go up and down the coast from here to South Padre. Sometimes he'd anchor his boat right out there and swim up to the beach and join random people at their cookouts. I don't remember a whole lot about him, but I remember he used to write poems on scraps of paper and give them to people. I think that's what fascinated me the most about him. He was this fearless fisherman who wrote poetry. He smiles when he says that. I remember thinking he was some kind of untouchable mythical creature. Samson's smile fades and he pauses for a moment. Hurricane Ike hit in 2008. It destroyed most of the island. I was helping with the cleanup and I found Rake's boat toward the end of the peninsula in Gilcrest. It was in shreds. He fingers his necklace, looking down at it. I took a piece of the boat and made this necklace out of it. He keeps his fingers on his necklace and looks back out at the ocean, sliding the piece of wood back and forth through the cord. What happened to Rake? Samson faces me. I don't know. He wasn't technically a resident of the area, so he wasn't counted among the missing or dead. But he never would have abandoned that boat even during a hurricane. I don't know that people actively searched for him, to be honest. I'm not even sure anyone noticed he was missing after the hurricane.
You noticed? Samson's expression changes when I say that. There's a sadness in him, and a little bit of it seeps out. I don't like it because apparently sadness is what I connect with. I feel like he's tugging at my soul with that look. Samson isn't at all who I thought he was when I met him. I don't know how to process that. Admitting he's nothing like I assumed he was makes me disappointed in myself. I've never looked at myself as judgmental, but I think I am. I judged him. I judged Sarah. I look away from Samson and stand up. I step down onto the lower level of the roof and turn around when I reach the window. We exchange a stare that lasts for about 5 silent seconds. I was wrong about you.
Samson nods, holding my gaze. It's okay. He says that with sincerity, like he doesn't hold it against me at all. I don't come across people very often that I think I can learn something from, but he might actually have me figured out more than I have him figured out. I find that attractive. Which is why I exit the roof and walk down the stairs feeling a lot heavier than when I walked up them. The dog is still in the same spot when I make it back outside. He's looking at me excitedly, his tail wagging when I reach the bottom step. Look at you being all obedient. I bend down and pet him. His hair is all matted. The poor, unloved thing reminds me so much of myself.
Is that your dog?
I follow the voice until I see a woman seated at a picnic table beneath the first level of the house. She's messing with a bag of something sitting on her lap. She's older, maybe in her 70s. She must be Marjorie. I don't know, I say, looking down at the dog. We just met. I walk closer to the picnic table. The dog follows me.
You a friend of Samson's? She asks.
I don't know, I say, repeating myself. We just met, too. She laughs.
Well, if you figure him out, let me know. He's a mystery, that one.
I guess I'm not the only one who thinks that about him. He wanted me to see the view from your roof. It's gorgeous. Now that I'm closer, I can see she's cracking pecans. I lean against one of the stilts holding her house up. How long have you known Samson? I ask her. She lifts her chin in thought.
Since the beginning of the year, I guess. I had a heart attack in February. Can't get around like I used to, so he comes over every now and then and I put him to work. He doesn't complain. He also doesn't charge me, so I'm not sure what he's getting out of it.
I smile. I like that he doesn't take money from her. Not that she can't afford to pay someone to help her. She's sitting in the tallest house in what's probably the nicest neighborhood on this peninsula. It's not the most modern, it's actually kind of dated, but it has character. It feels lived in, unlike a lot of these other houses that are rent-ready and identical. I really like your house, I say, looking around. What do you call this level?
The stilt level, she says.
She points above her head.
We consider that the first floor.
I glance around at the other houses. Some of them have enclosed their stilt levels. Some have made them parking spaces. I like Marjorie's. She's got a tiki bar, a picnic table, and a couple of hammocks hanging between some of the stilts.
Some people like to turn their stilt levels into extra rooms, she says. The new idiots next door enclosed an entire guest room on their stilt level. Not too bright, but they didn't want my opinion. They'll figure it out soon enough. Some days the ocean is our neighbor, but some days the ocean is our roommate.
She motions for me to come closer.
Here, take these.
She hands me a gallon-sized bag of shelled pecans. You don't have to give me these, I say, trying to hand them back to her. She waves me away.
Keep them, I have too many.
I have no idea what I'm going to do with a pound of pecans. I'll give them to Alana, I guess. Thank you. Marjorie nods her head at the dog.
Have you named him yet?
No.
You should call him Pepper Jack Cheese.
I laugh.
Why? Why not?
I look down at the dog. He doesn't look like a piece of cheese. I'm not sure any dog looks like cheese. Pepper Jack, I say, trying the name out on him. Do you feel like a Pepper Jack?
Pepper Jack Cheese, Marjorie corrects. He deserves the full name.
I like Marjorie. She's odd. Thanks for the pecans. I look down at the dog. Let's go home, Pepper Jack Cheese.
Chapter 11. I went to a small elementary school. That's where I met Natalie. It was only a few blocks from my house, and it was small enough that there was only one teacher per grade. Your clique was the grade you were in.
In elementary school, no one cared about money because we were too young to really know better. Junior high and high school were different. They were much larger campuses, and by that age, money defined your clique, unless you were exceptionally pretty, or in Zachary Henderson's case, famous on YouTube. He wasn't rich, but his social media status landed him in the rich crowd. Followers are considered a more valuable currency than cash to a lot of people my age. I came from the worst part of town, and everyone knew it. The kids in my neighborhood who were just as poor as me slowly began to dwindle. A lot of them followed in the same sad footsteps as their parents, turning to drugs. I never felt part of that crowd because I did whatever I could to be the exact opposite of my mother and the people like her. It didn't matter at school, though. Natalie was my only friend until I joined the volleyball team as a freshman. A few of the girls on the team accepted me, especially after I became the best one on the team, but most of them resented me. They still treated me like I was less than them. And it wasn't necessarily typical bullying, no name-calling or being shoved around in the hallways. I think I might have been too intimidating to some of them to be bullied. I would have fought back and they knew it. It was more that I was avoided, ignored. I was never included in anything. I'm sure a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was one of the few in my school who had no cell phone, no laptop, no home phone, no means of connecting outside of school hours, and that can be socially detrimental for anyone these days. Or maybe that's just my way of excusing being excluded for the better part of 6 years. It's hard not to grow bitter when you spend so much time alone. It's especially hard not to grow bitter at class systems and people with money, because the richer they were, the more it seemed I didn't exist to them. Which is why being here on this beach, with the type of people I'm sure I would have been invisible to in high school, is hard for me. I want to believe Sarah would have treated me the same as she does now had I known her in high school. The more I get to know her, the less I see her as someone who would be intentionally shitty to anyone. And Samson, how did he treat the underdogs? Not everyone who had money was an asshole in my high school, but enough of them were that I think I might have just lumped them all together. Part of me wonders if things would have been different if I would have tried harder, opened up more. Would I have been accepted? Maybe the only reason I wasn't accepted is because I didn't want to be. It was easier to stay to myself. I had Natalie when I needed her, but she had a cell phone and other friends that kept her busy, so we weren't inseparable. I can't even say we were best friends. I just know that I never did things like this. I never hung out in groups with people. When I was old enough to get a job, I worked as much as I possibly could. So bonfires and cookouts and spending time with people my own age is foreign to me. I'm trying to find a way to be at ease in this crowd, but it's going to take time. I've spent a lot of years becoming the person I am. It's hard to change who you are in a span of a few days. There are about 8 people around the campfire, but none of them are Samson. He came down and grabbed a burger, but then went back to his house after he ate. The only 2 I know are Sarah and Marcos, but they're sitting across from me, the fire separating us. I don't think they know the other people here all that well either. I heard Marcos ask one of the guys where he's from. This must be a beach thing. Hanging out with random people you barely know. Strangers gathering around a fire, asking one another superficial questions. Until they're drunk enough to pretend they've known each other their whole lives. I think Sarah can tell I'm folding in on myself. She walks over and sits down next to me. Pepperjack cheese is lying in the sand next to my chair. Sarah looks down at the dog and scratches him on the head. Where'd you find this thing? He followed me home earlier. Have you named him yet? Pepperjack cheese. She looks at me. Seriously? I shrug. I kinda like it. We should give him a bath later. We have an outdoor shower on the stilt level.
You think your mom would let me keep him?
Not in the house, but we could make him a spot outside.
She probably won't even notice, honestly. They're barely here. I've noticed that. They both get home late and tend to go to bed soon after. They leave early in the morning. Why are they gone so much? They both work in Houston. Traffic is terrible, so they eat dinner together in the city on weeknights so they don't have to fight it. But they take off Fridays during the summer, so they both have three-day weekends. Why do they even bother driving here Monday through Thursday? Isn't their main house in Houston? My mother would worry about me too much. She's not as strict as she used to be, because I'm almost 20, but she still wants to know I'm home in bed every night. And she loves the ocean. I think she sleeps better here. Does anyone live in your beach house when it isn't summer? No, we use it as a rental. We come here for holidays or a weekend getaway every now and then. She stops petting Pepper Jack cheese and looks at me. Where are you staying when you start classes in August? Are you moving back in with your mother? My stomach turns at that question. They all still think I'm going to some community college back in Kentucky. Not to mention, I still haven't told anyone about my mother. No, I'll be. Marcos appears and pulls Sarah out of her chair before I can finish my sentence. He swoops her up and she squeals and wraps her arms around his neck as he runs her out toward the water. Pepper Jack Cheese stands up and barks because of the commotion. It's okay, I say, putting my hand on his head. Lie down. He resumes his position in the sand. I stare up at Samson's house, wondering what he's doing. Does he have a girl with him? That would explain why he isn't out here socializing. I don't like being out here alone now that Sarah and Marcos are in the water. I don't know any of these other people, and they're really starting to get rowdy. I think I'm the only one not drinking. I stand up and go for a walk to get away from the group before any of them decide to play spin the bottle or something else just as horrifying. Pepper Jack Cheese follows me. I'm really starting to like this dog. His loyalty is nice, but his name is way too long. I might just call him PJ. There's an abandoned sandcastle a few yards away from the group that's half destroyed. PJ runs over to it and starts sniffing around it. I sit down next to the sandcastle and start rebuilding one of the walls. Life is weird. One day you're staring at your dead mother, and a few days later, you're building a sandcastle on the beach by yourself in the dark with a dog named after a cheese.
It'll be washed away by the tide in an hour.
I look up to see Samson standing beside me. I'm extremely relieved to see him here, and that makes me feel strange. I'm starting to find an odd comfort in his presence. Then you better help me build a retaining wall. Samson walks around the sandcastle and sits on the other side of it. He looks at the dog.
He likes you.
I fed him. I'm sure if you gave him a burger, he'd follow you around too. Samson leans forward and begins piling sand up on his side of the castle. The sight of it makes me grin. A hot, shirtless guy playing in the sand. I steal glances at him every now and then, impressed by his focus. His name is Pepper Jack Cheese, I say, breaking a stretch of silence. Samson smiles.
You met Marjorie.
How'd you know it was her idea?
She has two cats. Their names are Cheddar Cheese and Mozzarella.
I laugh. She's interesting.
Yeah, she is.
The tide pushes closer and some of the water spills into the area where we're working. Samson stops patting the walls with his hands.
You been in the water yet?
No, I'm kind of leery of it.
Why?
Jellyfish, sharks, all the things I can't see beneath the surface. Samson laughs.
We hung out on top of a three-story house today. You're safer in the ocean than you were on that roof.
He stands up and wipes sand from his shorts.
Come on.
He's walking into the water, not waiting on me. I look for Marcos and Sarah, but they're a good ways down. The ocean is massive, so I don't know why going into it with Samson seems intimate. I stand up and pull off my shorts, then toss them near Pepper Jack Cheese.
Keep an eye on those, I say.
I walk into the water. It's warmer than I thought it would be. Samson is several feet ahead of me.
I keep walking, surprised at how far out I have to go before the water even reaches my knees. Samson dives forward into a wave, disappearing under the water. When the water is finally up to my chest, Samson reappears. He's 2 feet in front of me when he pops up out of the water. He brushes his hair back and looks down at me.
See, nothing scary.
He lowers himself until the water is up to his neck. Our knees accidentally touch, but he acts like he doesn't notice. He makes no move to back away, but I move the slightest bit to make sure it doesn't happen again. I don't know him all that well, and I'm not sure I want to give him that idea. He did just have a different girl on his lap the other night. I have no plans to be another lap trophy.
Did Marjorie give you pecans today?
He asks. I nod, and it makes him laugh.
I have so many fucking pecans, he says. I just leave them on other people's porches now.
Is that what she does all day, crack pecans?
Pretty much.
Where does she get them? She doesn't even have any trees.
I have no idea, he says. I don't know her all that well. I only met her a few months ago. I was walking by her house and she stopped me and asked me if I was going to the store anytime soon. I asked what she needed and she told me she needed batteries. I asked her what size and she said, surprise me.
I smile, but it's not really because of what he said. It's because I like the way he talks. There's something about the way his bottom lip moves when he speaks that steals my focus. Samson's gaze returns to my face, but he's not looking at my eyes. I notice him glance at my mouth and then look away again. He swims out a little farther. The water is already up to my neck. I'm having to use my arms to keep myself in an area where I can touch.
Sarah said you've been sick the last few days, he says.
I haven't been feeling well, but it's more of an emotional illness than a physical one.
You homesick?
I shake my head. No, definitely not homesick. He's in an uncharacteristically talkative mood, it seems. I take advantage of that. Where do you go every day? What do you do besides help out old ladies for free?
I just try to be invisible, he says.
What does that mean? Samson looks away from me, over to the full moon balancing right above the edge of the water.
It's a long explanation. I don't really feel like long explanations right now.
Not surprising. He seems to want to stay in the shallow end when it comes to conversations. I can't figure you out, I say. His expression doesn't change at all, but his voice has a tinge of amusement to it when he says,
I didn't think you wanted to.
That's because I thought I had you figured out, but I already told you I was wrong. You're layered.
Layered? He repeats. Like an onion or a cake?
Definitely an onion. Your layers are the kind a person has to peel back.
Is that what you're trying to do?
I shrug. I have nothing else to do. Maybe I'll spend my summer peeling back all your layers until you finally answer a question.
I answered one. I told you about my necklace.
I nod. That's true. You did give me that.
Do you think you're easy to read?
He asks.
I don't know.
You aren't.
Are you trying?
He holds my stare for a moment.
If you are.
That response makes my knees feel like anchors. I have a feeling we won't get far with each other, I say. I like keeping my secrets. I get the feeling you do too. He nods.
You won't get past my first layer, I can promise you that.
Something tells me I will. Why are you so private? Is your family famous or something?
Or something, he says.
He keeps moving closer to me. It makes me think this attraction might be mutual. That's hard for me to wrap my mind around, that a guy as good-looking and rich as him would find me interesting in any way. It reminds me of how I felt the first time Dakota kissed me, which is why I back away from Samson. I don't want him to say or do anything that might make me feel the way Dakota made me feel right after our first kiss. I never want to feel that again. But I can't help but wonder if things would be different with Samson. What would he say after we kiss? Would he be as heartless as Dakota was?
We've somehow turned now, and my back is toward the beach. It's like we're moving, but so slowly it isn't noticeable. There are drops of water on Samson's bottom lip, and I can't stop staring at them. Our knees brush again. This time I don't move away, but the connection only lasts for a second. I feel somewhat deflated when it passes. I wonder what he feels.
Probably not as confused about what he wants as I am. What's your reason for being secretive? He asks.
I think about that for a moment. I guess I've never had anyone I wanted to tell anything to. There's an understanding in his eyes. He says, "Same," but it's almost a whisper. He sinks under the water and disappears. I hear him come up for air behind me a few seconds later. I spin around and he's even closer to me now. Our legs are definitely touching, but neither of us pulls away. I'm not sure I've ever felt this, like my blood is zipping through my veins. My interactions with guys have always left me wanting more space between the guy and me. I'm not used to wishing there was no space between me and another person.
"Ask me some questions," he says. "I probably won't answer most of them, but I want to know what you want to know about me.
Probably more than you'll give me.
Try me.
Are you an only child?"
He nods.
"How old are you?"
20.
"Where did you grow up?"
He shakes his head, refusing to answer that one.
"That wasn't even an intrusive question," I say.
"If you knew the answer, you'd realize it was."
He's right. This is going to be a challenge. But I don't think he realizes how competitive I can be. I did earn a full ride to Penn State thanks to my commitment to winning.
"Sarah said you're going into the Air Force Academy?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"It's a family tradition."
"Ah," I say, a morsel. "So your father was in the Air Force?"
"Yes, and my grandfather."
"How is your family so rich? The military doesn't pay that well."
"Some people go into the military for the esteem, not the pay."
"Do you want to go to the Air Force, or are you doing it because it's expected of you?"
"I want to go."
"That's good."
I don't know if it's him or the current, but he's even closer now. One of my legs is between his knees and my thigh occasionally brushes his. I might be doing it on purpose, which surprises me. Maybe he is too.
"What's your favorite animal?" I ask.
"Whale."
"Favorite food?"
"Seafood."
"Favorite thing to do?"
"Swim."
I laugh. Those are typical beach rat answers I'll never get anywhere.
"Ask better questions," he says pointedly.
Another challenge. We stare at each other with heaviness while I think of a question I really want an answer to. "Sarah said you don't do relationships, that you only date girls who are here on vacations. Why is that?" He doesn't answer. Another question that's off limits, I guess.
"Okay, too private, I'll think of an easier question."
"No, I'm gonna answer that one," he says. "I'm just trying to figure out how." He lowers himself until the water is level with his chin. I do the same. I like that all we can focus on right now are each other's eyes, although his aren't very telling.
"I don't trust easily."
I wasn't expecting that answer. I was expecting him to say he likes being single or something equally stereotypical.
"Why? Did you get your heart broken?"
He presses his lips together while he ponders that question.
"Yeah,"
he says flatly.
"Crushed me. Her name was Daria."
The fact that he said her name out loud causes an unexpected tiny sliver of jealousy to poke at me from the inside. I want to ask him what happened, but I don't really want the answer. "What's it like?" I ask him.
"Having my heart broken?"
I nod. He pushes a floating piece of seaweed away from us.
"Have you ever been in love?"
I laugh. "No, not even close. I've never loved anyone, nor have I ever been loved by anyone."
"Yes, you have," he says. "Family counts."
I shake my head again because, even if family counted, my answer would remain the same. My father barely knows me. My mother wasn't capable of loving me. I look away from him and stare out at the open water.
I don't have that kind of family, I say quietly.
Not a lot of people have mothers like mine. I don't even remember her hugging me, not once.
I cut my eyes back to his. Now that I think about it, I'm not even sure I've ever been hugged.
How is that possible?
I mean, I've hugged people as a greeting, a quick hello or a quick goodbye hug, but I've never been, I don't know how to put it,
held.
I nod, yeah. That's a better description, I guess. I've never been held by anyone. I don't know what that's like. I try to avoid it, actually. Seems like it would be weird.
I guess it depends on who's holding you.
My throat feels thick. I swallow and nod in agreement, but say nothing.
It surprises me that you don't think your father loves you. He seems like a nice guy.
He doesn't know me. This is the first time I've seen him since I was 16. I know more about you than I do about him.
That's not very much.
Exactly, I say, facing him full on again. Samson's knee brushes high up on my inner thighs this time, and I'm glad he can't see anything from my chin down, because my body is covered in chills right now.
I didn't think there were many people in the world like me, he says. You think we're alike?
I want to laugh at that comparison, but there's not an ounce of humor in his expression.
I believe we have a lot more in common than you think we do, Bea.
You think you're as alone in this world as I am?